Are you sitting on the sidelines of the property market right now, like anxiously refreshing the financial news on your phone, tracking the latest interest rate hike, scrolling through property listings, just waiting for that absolute, undeniable, perfect moment to invest?
Yeah, which is something we all do, right? It's human nature to look for that perfect entry point.
Exactly. But what if the data actually shows that the perfect moment you're waiting for mathematically does not exist?
Right. It's a complete myth. And honestly, realizing that is the first step to actually building wealth.
So true. Welcome to today's deep dive, everyone. We are looking at a really fascinating excerpt from a piece titled, "Why Your Investment Time Horizon Matters More Than Timing the Market." And our mission today is basically to free you from the paralysis of trying to, outsmart the global economy.
Because you can't. I mean, no one can.
Right. So we're going to unpack a much more powerful, less stressful, and frankly, more reliable tool for your financial future, which is your investment time horizon.
Yeah, and it really requires a fundamental rewiring of how you view risk and reward. The overarching theme of today's source material is that successful wealth building does not require a crystal ball.
No crystal ball needed. I love that.
Exactly. You do not need to predict the unpredictable. The whole foundation of a functional investment strategy is defining your personal timeline. Because, well, that's literally the one variable that is entirely within your control.
Okay, let's unpack this a bit though, because the instinct to try and time the market is just so deeply ingrained in anyone who consumes financial
Oh,
news.
absolutely. It's everywhere.
Right. Like if I read the business section every single morning and I track the central bank's interest rate announcements, if I look at local construction permitting data and, I don't know, monitor investor sentiment indexes, shouldn't I logically be able to synthesize that data and spot the exact bottom of the
That
market?
sounds totally logical.
Right, because in any other discipline, doing that level of intense research is just considered being a responsible adult. Isn't that just being a responsible investor?
It feels like responsible behavior, definitely, because our brains are wired to find patterns. We just assume that if we gather enough data points, the path forward will become super clear.
But it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. The source material totally dismantles that assumption by looking at the mechanical nature of the property market. The issue isn't a lack of data, it is the sheer volume of competing independent variables.
Competing variables. Okay, like what?
Well, property markets are being pulled simultaneously by global economic growth, hyperlocal employment levels, sudden demographic shifts, zoning policy changes, the cost of financing, and, supply chain constraints on building materials.
And I'm guessing those forces are rarely synchronized.
They almost never move in the same direction. Let's look at a practical scenario. Imagine a city announces this massive new technology hub. Employment is projected to absolutely boom.
Okay, so my research tells me this is a huge buy signal, right? Because demand for housing is going to skyrocket.
Exactly. But simultaneously, the central bank raises interest rates to combat national inflation, which instantly doubles the cost of a mortgage.
Oh, wow, okay.
Right. And at the exact same time, the local government passes a restrictive new zoning law that limits development, while a global supply chain bottleneck makes lumber like 30% more expensive.
So the data is actively contradicting itself. I mean, the employment data screams buy, but the financing and construction data scream wait.
Precisely. And this is exactly why timing the broader market is just a futile exercise. These variables are chaotic, they're nonlinear. Even professional economists, people with supercomputers and huge teams of analysts, they're constantly revising their forecasts.
Because they can't predict everything.
Exactly. They might accurately predict a drop in interest rates, sure, but then entirely miss a sudden shift in consumer confidence triggered by some unexpected geopolitical event. Trying to predict the convergence of all these chaotic variables is basically like trying to jump onto a moving treadmill in the dark.
Oh, that's a great image. If you guess the speed wrong, you just get thrown off.
Yeah, you get totally thrown off. Attempting to time the market doesn't actually make you a diligent investor, it just makes you a hesitant one. You end up sitting in cash, permanently waiting for this frictionless environment that simply does not exist in a free market.
Which brings us to the actual solution the text provides. Since predicting the broader market is, as you said, statistically improbable, the focus has to shift to the one metric that isn't dependent on global macroeconomics.
Right, your own timeline.
Exactly, designing your time horizon. So what does this all mean for you listening? It's essentially picking your mode of transport based on your destination. If you are saving up for a house deposit and you absolutely need that cash in 2 years, that is a quick trip down the road.
You take a bicycle?
Yes, you take a bike. It's maneuverable, you can stop on a dime, and you are not committing to a massive journey. A high-yield savings account or a short-term bond, that's your bicycle.
I really like that analogy.
Thanks. But if you are building wealth for retirement over the next 20 years, well, you're crossing the entire country. You take a train. You wouldn't use a bicycle to cross the country.
No, that would be exhausting.
Right. And you wouldn't take a heavy locomotive just to go to the corner store. Neither approach is wrong. The strategy is entirely dictated by the destination.
That transport analogy gets right to the mechanics of property as an asset class, actually. Real estate is inherently a heavy locomotive. It's a long-term vehicle.
Because it's slow to move.
Exactly. When you establish a long-term time horizon, you are acknowledging how wealth in real estate is actually generated. It comes from two distinct mechanisms working in tandem: rental income and capital appreciation. And neither of those mechanisms operates effectively in the short term.
Because they both require a runway to actually compound.
Yes. Think about the compounding effect of rent. It isn't just about collecting a check every month. It's about the mechanism of reinvesting that yield.
Right. Putting the money back to work.
Exactly. If you collect rent and reinvest it into further assets or, you know, use it to pay down the principal of a mortgage, your equity position grows. The next year, the yield is being generated on a slightly larger equity base.
And capital appreciation works similarly.
Yeah. Property values do not double overnight. They trend upward over decades, absorbing inflation along the way. When you force a short time horizon onto property, you essentially strip the asset of the one ingredient it physically requires to perform, which is time.
And the text actually pulls in research from Vanguard to back this up, which I found fascinating. It shows that this isn't just some eccentric quirk of real estate. Vanguard's data proves that maintaining a long-term strategy as opposed to trying to predict short-term market movements is the dominant factor in success across all major asset classes.
Oh, absolutely. It's a universal principle.
Right. Whether you're dealing with equities, municipal bonds, or commercial real estate, attempting to just jump in and out of the market based on daily headlines consistently underperforms steady long-term holding. Volatility isn't a glitch in the system. It's a permanent feature of liquid and semi-liquid markets.
That is a crucial realization. So if the data overwhelmingly proves that the 20-year train ride gets you to your destination safely, the real question becomes, why do so many investors pull the emergency brake halfway through the trip?
That is the million-dollar question.
Right. What happens psychologically during a market dip that causes people to completely abandon a mathematically sound strategy?
Well, the source material addresses that exact psychological trap using this really brilliant visualization of a mountain range.
I love this part.
It's so good. So imagine you are standing on the ground, right, hiking through the mountains. From ground level, every single peak feels like an insurmountable, exhausting climb. And every valley feels like a terrifying, steep drop. The terrain feels extreme and dangerous.
Because you're right in the middle of it.
Exactly. That ground level view represents a short-term time horizon. When you are operating with that mindset, every single daily market fluctuation, like a bad jobs report or a sudden dip in housing prices, it feels like a catastrophic, life-altering event.
It feels like you're falling off a cliff. But the text asks the reader to elevate their perspective to filter out that noise.
Right. If you look at that exact same mountain range from the window of an airplane cruising at 30,000 feet, the perspective completely shifts. Those terrifying peaks and valleys, they flatten out. They just form part of this continuous rolling landscape that is generally trending in one direction.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that airplane view is your long-term time horizon. It filters out the daily panic and reveals the broader signal.
Yeah, it really does.
And that airplane view is the primary defense mechanism against emotional decision-making. Because when you are trapped on the ground, reacting to short-term price movements, your decisions are driven entirely by dopamine and cortisol, fear and excitement.
You're just riding an emotional roller coaster.
Exactly. You read a negative headline about housing starts, your cortisol spikes, and you want to sell at a loss just to stop the pain. Or you hear about a neighborhood booming, FOMO kicks in, and you overpay for an asset just to get in on the action.
Right. The classic buy high, sell low mistake.
Precisely. The long-term time horizon prevents this because it fundamentally changes how you process data. You realize that a temporary market decline isn't a crisis. It's just a small expected valley in a much larger landscape of growth.
It gives you the psychological permission to simply ignore the daily noise.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't just ignore everything, right? I mean, if you are ignoring the daily stock ticker and the monthly inflation reports, what data are you actually supposed to be looking at from that airplane view?
That's a great question. You focus on the structural fundamentals that actually dictate long-term value. The source material brings in another article here titled, What Makes an Investment Property Location Attractive?
Ah, okay, getting into the location fundamentals.
Exactly. It points out that from a long-term perspective, you shouldn't be looking at today's market sentiment. You should be looking at hyper-local rental demand drivers. Is there a university nearby? Is a major hospital system expanding?
What does the neighborhood infrastructure look like?
Yes. Are they building a new subway line that will connect this suburb to the city center in 5 years? These physical and demographic realities are far more reliable indicators of long-term success than whatever financial panic is dominating social media today.
Okay, that structural approach makes a lot of sense. But I have to push back a little on the practical application of this, because there is this massive barrier sitting right in the middle of this philosophy.
Oh, I know where you're going with this.
Right. Having a long-term airplane view mindset is great in theory, but real estate is incredibly capital intensive. The airplane view is entirely useless to me if I am stuck at the terminal, because the entry ticket costs 20% of a $500,000 asset.
It's the biggest hurdle for most people.
So if it takes a listener, 10 years of aggressive saving just to scrape together a down payment for an investment property. Haven't they just lost a whole decade of their precious time horizon?
Yep, they have.
During those 10 years of saving, inflation is actively eroding the purchasing power of their cash, and they are capturing absolutely zero capital appreciation or rental yield. How does a time horizon work in your favor if the sheer cost of the asset prevents you from starting the clock?
This raises an important question, and it is the most significant structural flaw in traditional real estate investing. It's exactly why rising property prices force so many potential investors into indefinite postponement.
They just get priced out forever.
Right. They get trapped in a phenomenon known as cash drag, where their savings are actually losing value against real inflation while they just sit on the sidelines waiting. To solve this, the source material introduces fractional property ownership.
Okay, let's get into the mechanics of that. Because I hear fractional ownership and my mind immediately jumps to like buying a timeshare, which is essentially just prepaying for a vacation, not an actual investment. How does this actually change the financial timeline?
It is so critical to separate fractional ownership from the timeshare model. A timeshare gives you use rights to a property for a week. That's it. True fractional property ownership, as discussed in the text, is an equity model.
An equity model, meaning you actually own a piece of it.
Exactly. Instead of putting your name on a single house deed, a legal entity, usually a special purpose vehicle or an LLC, is created to purchase and hold the property. And you, as the investor, buy shares in that legal entity.
So you own a piece of the company that owns the asset.
Precisely. Mechanistically, this entirely removes the traditional mortgage and down payment bottleneck. It dramatically lowers the initial capital required to enter the market.
Oh, I see.
Right. So if the property generates, let's say, $1,000 a month in net rental income, and you own 10% of the shares in the entity holding the asset, you receive $100 of that yield, usually distributed as a dividend.
Which means instead of waiting 10 years to stockpile cash for a whole building, you can deploy the cash you have today into a fraction of a building.
And that is exactly how it solves your timeline problem. It allows you to start your time horizon clock immediately. Time gets the opportunity to start compounding in your favor from day one.
That's huge.
It really is. You instantly gain exposure to the underlying asset's capital appreciation, and you start receiving fractional rental income, which you can then reinvest to buy more shares, accelerating the compounding process we discussed earlier.
The source mentions this isn't just theoretical modeling either. They highlight a specific framework operating right now called Osul Gamma.
Yes, Osul Gamma is utilized in the text as a practical example of how fractional ownership is being deployed right now to make real estate accessible. But what is truly fascinating here is the regulatory environment they're operating in.
Right, because regulation is key here.
Absolutely. The source notes that this framework is being tested within RGA's regulatory sandbox in Saudi Arabia.
Okay, for listeners who might not be familiar with global financial regulation, what exactly is a regulatory sandbox? Because, you know, sandbox makes it sound like a playground, but this is dealing with real equity and real assets.
Yeah, the name is a bit deceptive. A regulatory sandbox is actually a highly structured, controlled environment created by financial authorities. In this case, RAGA is the real estate general authority in Saudi Arabia.
Got it.
So when a financial technology company wants to introduce a novel investment model, like securitizing real estate into fractional shares, regulators naturally get very cautious. They want to ensure there is no systemic risk and that everyday consumers are protected against fraud or, you know, catastrophic failure.
Right. They don't want a tech company accidentally crashing the local housing market.
Exactly. So rather than banning the innovation outright or just letting it run wild without oversight, the government creates this sandbox. It allows the company to operate their fractional platform with real users and real money, but under strict continuous auditing and supervision by the regulators.
That's incredibly smart. It lets them test the waters safely.
It does. It allows the government to observe the mechanics of the platform, ensure the legal structures protecting the investors' shares are sound, and verify that the dividend payouts operate transparently. The source points readers to a comprehensive guide called Understanding Fractional Property Ownership in Saudi Arabia, specifically to break down how this balance of tech innovation and investor protection is evolving in that region.
Wow. It really bridges the massive gap between the abstract philosophy of a 20-year time horizon and the harsh reality of actually getting your capital into the market. Fractional ownership essentially democratizes that airplane view.
That's a perfect way to put it. It provides the physical mechanism for everyday people to apply the principles of long-term wealth creation without needing hundreds of thousands of dollars in liquid cash just to get started.
Looking at all the threads we've pulled today, the core takeaway is incredibly empowering. The goal isn't to beat the market. You cannot control the vast web of macroeconomic variables, and you will just exhaust yourself emotionally and financially trying to predict them.
You really will. It's a losing game.
Yeah. What you actually control is the depth of your research, your discipline to ignore the ground-level noise, and the longevity of your commitment to your strategy. Patience, powered by a clearly defined timeline and the mechanics of compounding, is what ultimately builds wealth. By defining your time horizon, you stop reacting to the market's chaos and start letting the underlying mechanics of the market work for you.
It completely transforms investing from a game of stressful speculation into a process of steady, calculated accumulation.
Well said. But before we wrap up this deep dive, there's one brief point from the source material that warrants a much deeper reflection.
Oh, yeah, this is an important one.
It is. The text notes that your investment time horizon is not carved in stone. Evolving personal goals, unexpected career changes, or shifting family commitments, they require you to periodically review and adjust your timeline.
You can't just set it and completely forget it.
Right. We have spent this entire discussion focusing on the external risks, right? The threat of interest rate shifting, zoning laws changing, or global supply chains breaking down. We worry about the market changing today.
Naturally, yeah.
But what if the greatest unacknowledged threat to your financial future isn't a sudden macroeconomic crash? What if the silent risk is that your own life has fundamentally shifted? You know, you've had kids, changed careers, moved cities, and you're still blindly following an investment strategy built for the person you were 5 years ago.
That is a terrifying thought, but so crucial to consider.
It really is. Keep that in mind the next time you find yourself anxiously sitting on the sidelines, waiting for a perfect moment that has already passed you by.